Welcome to Podcast Ed, the podcast of redefinedonline.org, covering the stories behind the new definition of public education. On this episode, Step Up for Students President Doug Tuthill talks with Amy Dumit, the operator of Jupiter Learning Community. Dumit's mission is on the cutting edge of the movement organizing families towards learning options that best meet their needs. Currently leading a community of 20 homeschoolers receiving professional instruction from traditionally credentialed teachers, Dumit's work demonstrates the continuing of the blurring of the lines between homeschooling, micro schools, learning pods, and the traditional public and private school systems, a blurring that is the new normal for public education. Thank you for listening and enjoy the episode.
So I'm happy to have Amy Dumit, who is a founder of an LLC that is in the early stages of organizing local learning communities. Your first learning community is called the Jupiter Learning Community, and you're trying to help families organize themselves, particularly in the midst of this pandemic, to create learning options that best meet their kids' needs. So you are on the cutting edge of this whole movement towards some people call them micro schools, some people call them homeschool cooperatives. But Amy, you're on the cutting edge of helping families and educators organize these local communities. Is that fair to say?
You know, it's interesting because everything has transitioned so much in this pandemic, but this idea of helping homeschool families come together and have a solid education available for their kids has been a long-term dream of mine. And the pandemic has definitely accelerated that. It's just like a shot of adrenaline to it.
So Amy, how did you get into this? I know you have a sort of interesting background. Just give our listeners a little bit of your history, your background, and then how you got into where you are today.
To start with, I've always wanted to be a teacher. So from the time I was a little kid, I used to, you know, teach my stuffed animals and, you know, that was teach my little brother against his wishes. So that was always where I was headed. And yeah, I went to school. My undergrad is elementary and early childhood education, and I taught for a number of years. And I really found myself bouncing around because right when I started teaching is right about the same time that No Child Left Behind got rolled out. And when that happened, the school system started to change. At least that's what I saw. What I had learned as an educator, you know, being prepared to be a teacher, it looked very different. So I got my first inkling of, I don't like this as much anymore. I don't feel like I'm teaching these kids. But I continued to move around. So I got my gifted certification. I did pull out for gifted students. I worked in an IB school. I worked at middle school, elementary, and I even went and worked for Sylvan for a while, Sylvan Learning Center, as a director of education, moved up to a center director and then an area director. And that's where I think I got my first real taste of really enjoying curriculum development was there. It's not the same as what I'm doing now, obviously, but just getting to really get to the nuts and bolts of kids and how they're struggling. And I stayed in education for quite some time. I took a little detour and went to law school because I thought that would be a nice change of pace. So I took that detour, but I missed working with kids. I really missed, you know, being around them and just watching them flourish and the positivity that they bring, even when it's messy in the classroom. And I ended up kind of walking away from that law legal field that I was in and founded a nonprofit, which is separate from what we're talking about today, but important. And that nonprofit was Forget Me Not Advocacy Group, and it was focused on domestic violence awareness and prevention, with a focus again on just educating young people, what's healthy, what's not. And that is what morphed into where I am today, because that introduced me to homeschool groups and community organizations and other nonprofits that were trying to help our communities and our children, families. And that's really where all this started to come to fruition. So I started doing homeschool groups a couple years ago.
Let's pause a minute. What does it mean to do a homeschool group? Define that a little more specifically.
So what I did was I offered classes at my home for parents that wanted their kids to have something more than what they could provide at home. And that looked different for everybody. So it might simply be, I love to homeschool my kids, but I would like them to have some additional interaction, or I want them to get something that's science related or language arts because that's not my strength. But it all looked different. So I had a number of kids that came through my little group, and it just, you know, I found that's where I started realizing, you know, it's a learning process, right? When you start something and you're not 100% understanding what you're doing. My intention was there, but the reality of being able to teach all day and do the business side of it and, you know, keep my house spick and span clean and safe every day, all day, really was tough. And I didn't have enough students to basically substantiate just living expenses.
Right.
So when the summer came and the kids died off, I ended up taking a job at a private school for a year. And again, just found myself in the same spot. Like, I just want to do what's best for these kids. I'm trying to help them to be the best they can be. And I felt like I was always running into roadblocks. So I just kept seeing the same thing happening where I was stressed out and I wasn't happy. It's like the joy was getting sucked out of me. And that's kind of led to where I am today. I bounced back into educational consulting, doing curriculum development, coaching parents that were homeschooling, ran into some like-minded people that wanted the same thing. And here we are. So
let's talk about here we are. Where are we? What's happening today? What are you building? What have you built so far?
Well, so far I worked with another parent and we've built up a community of homeschoolers. So we have approximately 20 students that come to us for everyday learning. So if you show up on location, it very much looks like a little school. We have certified teachers that, you know, we're also, they had all left the public / private system. They had been looking for something where they could express themselves creatively and be who they were as educators. And so we've found those people and connected them with families that were looking for the same thing. They weren't happy. Many of them, again, spurred on by what's happening in our world today with, you know, with coronavirus and, you know, looking for alternatives to distance learning, people that were homeschooling or wanted to homeschool but had to work all day so they couldn't be there for their kids, you know, or they wanted to homeschool but they were looking for that social piece, you know, where they just wanted to add more to their kid learning with other children. So it's developed quite rapidly. Word of mouth obviously is a big, you know, motivator. When people find you and they like what you're doing, they jump on and they send their friends. So it's developed into a K through eighth grade program, like I said, of approximately 20 kids. And we have 3 educators right now, plus myself.
So you have a location. Mm-hmm. And do kids show up there every day or they just come in and out?
They show up every day. It is homeschooling. So the parents are required to, you know, send their letter of intent to the district, take on the responsibility of being a homeschooling parent. But what we do is we provide all the educational piece of it. So they have that responsibility legally, which goes along with attendance. And if you're running late or you're picking up early, but they don't have to worry so much about, is my kid getting what they need? So we have some kids that consistently come late every day because mornings are hard for them, for what, not just because they want to sleep in. We have a lot of kids with reasons, you know, that morning is not easy or going to school every day is not easy. So parents have found us because we have a flexible dynamic that they need.
is your programs, are they primarily a competency-based program? That is, each child is sort of moving at their own pace with their own set of learning standards?
Yes and no. So the way that it's structured is that when a child is new to the program, they are assessed, and I'm not talking about assessed, like we don't sit them down with a state assessment. We do informal assessments, interest inventories. You know, we do check their math levels, their reading levels. We take Fontes and Bunnell and use their structure to find, you know, where they are with their comprehension, as well as their literacy and their writing. And we take all that together and I create what's called a learning pathway, which is basically just an overview. It's like, here's where your child is in math. Here's where they are in language arts. Here's the social emotional aspect that we're seeing from your child, which is gathered from the child themselves, as well as the parents and the teachers. It's all input together. And then here are the goals.
I guess I'm asking, so you have 20 kids spread across K through 8.
Yes.
So I'm presuming that there's not really group instruction going on. There might be some group sort of activities going on, but most children have an individual learning plan, you know, and they're following that individual plan with the support of the instructional people in the room.
So they are, and there is group instruction both, because we have three teachers. So we have a kindergarten first grade room, and then we have second through fifth, and that's just numbers and personalities is how we divided that. So we have a second through fifth, and then we have a sixth through eighth room. And so each teacher only has, our middle school only has three, and our other two classes have nine. So they literally, you know, are looking at who's in their class and where they are, and where they can be grouped, they're grouped, and where they can be taught and differentiated. Like, so they might be reading a book at their level independently, but what they're learning in class, they might be learning in a small group with other kids that are on the same level.
How are you guys using technology in your programs?
It's a good question. We don't use it that much. We've eliminated that profusely. Not that we're absolutely anti-technology. The older kids definitely use it more for research and, you know, creating because it fits where they are better. But for the younger kids, our focus is really on play-based learning, you know, learning to interact with one another and do group work, getting those fine motor skills in for the little ones. So we really stay away from technology as a whole. Not to say that they never watch, you know, something or, you know, get to play a game here and there, but it's very limited.
So it sounds a bit like a Waldorf kind of approach, or maybe Montessori, where it's Waldorf particularly is pretty hostile towards artificial.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. It really is kind of a mix. And even within the community, you know, if you go into one classroom, there's a different approach to teaching because, you know, to me, it's really important that teachers get to be who they are and they approach learning from a different perspective. I will say that most of our teachers have a very strong creative streak, which is really neat to see because there's a lot of hands-on, a lot of arts and crafts, interactive games and creations.
Talk to me about your business model. I mean, are you designed to create this sort of one learning environment, or do you have a model, an expansion model? And if so, what might that look like?
You know, there was a need in the community for there to be a place, you know, a co-op, and co-ops are everywhere. People generally know what a homeschool co-op is, but a lot of co-ops are run a couple days a week, or they're run by parents. So to be part of the co-op, you have to teach or you have to be there a certain number of days. So it takes that aspect out. It's still an educational co-op, but the parents are hiring me to basically administer the day-to-day operations. So there's flexibility there. This particular model is really based off of what our community needs were, what our parents were looking for as a group and what, you know, I and you know, the partners, the teachers envisioned it being. But there's room there, you know, I've talked to so many people. There's people in Southern Palm Beach County or Central Palm Beach County or Martin County, Broward, that are looking for something similar. And that might very well look different. You know, it might be a smaller group of students. It might be a larger group. It might have one teacher, you know, it might be faith-based. It just really depends on what the needs are of the homeschool co-op itself and how it's run. To me, what's important is that the education is sound and that it's based on the standards, not because I believe in drilling the standards, but because I think they're an amazing guide so that you can make sure kids have the tools they need and that people that know how to educate students are the ones educating them. Those are the important pieces to me.
It sounds to me like, and I'm seeing this is going on for a while, but certainly with the pandemic, it's been accelerating, is the bright lines between homeschooling, homeschool co-ops, micro schools, private schools, that's all getting blurred. Because yes, a lot of our listeners would say, this sounds a lot like a private school.
It does. It sounds like a private school and it looks like a private school, but it's not a private school.
It's not a private school because all the kids who are enrolled are homeschool kids.
That's pretty much what differentiates it. Yeah. And, you know, I'm not a head of school. I'm not connected to the Department of Education. I'm not looking to do business as usual. The point is to create an environment where kids can be who they are. And I know that sounds really, in a way, cliche, but you know, kids can't be who they are. A lot of them cannot be who they are in a public or private school. It's very structured and it's very set to meet a certain group of individuals. You know, it's like you're going to be able to move through the curriculum at this speed. You can't go faster. You can't go slower. If you get lost, we're sorry. We might try to get you some extra services. And if you want to accelerate, again, we're sorry. Maybe if it's a private school, they'll let you jump ahead. But again, not all kids are, just because maybe you're advanced in math doesn't mean that you should be leaping into a higher grade level. Right. Might not be the best social decision.
You know, we've also done some podcasts with some of the leaders of the unschooled movement as exists today. Of course, that goes back decades. I think John Holt in the 60s was sort of one of the primary advocates of the term unschooling. But again, it sounds like it's a gray area. It sounds like some of the things you're doing, would John Holt would say, yeah, I'm very comfortable with that. Other things are a little more structured. So again, it sounds like there's a gray area between, you know, a homeschool environment, a private school environment, and an unschooled environment. Is that fair to say?
I definitely think that that's fair to say. And it's interesting you should say it's a gray area, because my whole life I function that way. I'm very much like, it's not all or nothing. You can't be this or this. Like, there's all these people that meet in the middle. And, you know, it's interesting because I think I mentioned this to you before, but, you know, I joke that we broke the system in some ways. And I know that sounds maybe very, you know, egotistical, and I don't mean it to sound that way. But when you try to explain to people what's happening in our learning community, they don't understand it. And I mean, I'm talking about insurance agencies, parents, you know, it doesn't, you know, when I spoke to you guys, because I was trying to figure out Gardner and where we fell and if we fell, we're a very different thing right now. It's this, you know, entity that just is kind of a creation of its own. But, you know, it's going to work great for those people that can't find their home, you know. And like you said, we have some people that have followed the unschooling movement, not a lot, but they've done that for a bit, and now they're looking for more structure. And we have other people who have been in the public and private schools forever that literally came and said, I'm here to talk to you about distance learning. Can you supervise my kid in distance learning? And I'm twitching because I don't want to supervise your kid in distance learning. I don't think it's the best thing for them. So I'm like, well, yeah, we can, but like, you know, look what's over here. You can be part of that and you might love it. And if you don't, you can always go back. You can always go back to the public school or the private school later. It's interesting that when people see what's happening and how happy their kids are, I mean, every week somebody makes a comment about how my child never wanted to go to school and now they can't wait. Or my child never complains about school anymore. You know, my kid's so excited to be here. One mom told us that her little boy prays for all of his friends every night and says he wishes they could have a school like he has. And that like just melted my heart because that's why we're there. That's the reason.
My friends and colleagues in the Department of Education are going to have heartburn in the next couple of years trying to figure out how to regulate all this because, you know, anybody in government, you know, it's all about boxes in, you know, and particularly a state as large as Florida, you know, you need to put things in boxes to make sense of it. Yeah. And you and other entrepreneurs out there and families and kids and teachers, you guys are all like redesigning the boxes. And I'm sure it's going to create a lot of heartburn of, you know, how do we regulate this? Is it simply regulated like a homeschool situation? Is it regulated like a private school? Is it regulated like a child care center? You know, I can see smoke coming out of the ears of government regulators trying to figure out how to manage all this because you guys are really, you know, reinventing things that are redesigning the boxes. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
Well, I think, you know, I definitely think you're right. And one can only hope that that doesn't hurt us, that it helps us. But, you know, the reality is, you know, I can at least speak for myself, and I know I've heard very similar, you know, my teachers are saying the same things to me every day, you know, when we just have conversations about what the kids are doing and how they're learning. And it actually took them a second to realize how much freedom they had. Because I think as educators, we're trained that you also have to fit in this box, you know, that whole stay in your lane mentality. This is your job, stay there. And this is the, you know, the principal or the head of school's job and they stay there. And in the process of all of that, and I'll call it regulation because that's what it is. And in the process of all these laws and rules and what makes the money flow and who gets the money and what kids get IEPs and which ones don't and all of that. And the only ones that get lost are the kids. You know, the teachers, they either agree to be part of the system or they don't. And good teachers walk away every day because they've had it, you know, up to their eyeballs with being micromanaged by people that don't educate. But the reality is, you know, you've got so many people out there, and I definitely think the whole pandemic and the virtual learning really showed us how broken the system is. Not that people aren't trying, but it's broken. It's antiquated. You know, it's not, we don't live in that society anymore. And as many things are that turn bad, it started off probably with a good purpose. I mean, I wasn't there. I know what I read. But, you know, you see somebody tried to structure it to make sure all kids had a good education. And it turned into what we have now, where so many kids are just falling between the cracks left and right. And they're giving up on everything before they're even in middle school. It used to be common for me to hear kids that were simply ADD or had a processing delay or, you know, what any number of things that were going on. They just, you know, weren't interested in something. Literally say to me as their teacher, I'm stupid. I'm never going to get this. And no kid should feel that way. You know, you don't have to fit in a box as an adult. I mean, you can choose to, but you can also deviate. And we put these kids in this structure that hinders them instead of allowing them to flourish. We're in a growth period right now in education. You have to look at where it's going and decide kind of which direction you're headed and see how you can follow the right path in that. So everybody's path is different.